This is episode 10 with Bill Genovese and Loretta Bruning.
Welcome to the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan. I am the president of Haku Global. This is a space for globally minded experts to dialogue about the future of leadership with a focus on the key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? From this conversation, innovative wisdom, practical tools, and actionable insights emerge to help future-ready leaders thrive in an uncertain, complex, and exponentially changing world. Let's jump in to the dialogue.
Welcome to this episode of the Flowcast. Really excited for this episode for two reasons. First, both guests today are current advisors for my company, Haku Global. And second, they both randomly picked the same time slot to participate in this Flowcast. If you've been listening to this Flowcast, you've noticed that the format is two guests dialoguing about this key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? I select the co-guests randomly. They pick one of two slots that are available for a specific date, and it's interesting to see who will dialogue together. And for this episode, randomly, two advisors for Haku Global picked the same time slot. So I'm very excited and honored to have both Bill Genovese and Loretta Bruning on the episode today. Bill is the VP of Corporate Strategy, Research, and Planning for Huawei in China. He has over 25 years' experience in consulting and delivering financial systems management applications and infrastructure. He is an advisor for FinTech for Good and global panel member for MIT Technology Review. If you follow Bill's posts in LinkedIn, you will realize that he is an overall brilliant gentleman with a strong interest in quantum computing. Loretta is the founder of Inner Mammal Institute, which offers free resources to help you manage your dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and endorphin. She is the author of three books, Habits of a Happy Brain, The Science of Positivity, and Tame Your Anxiety. Before starting the Inner Mammal Institute, Loretta spent 22 years teaching business management at California State University. She is very engaging and has a wealth of knowledge in how your brain chemistry influences your behaviors. Both Bill and Loretta are advisors for my company, Haku Global, an organization focused on helping leadership be more future intelligent by enhancing individual cognitive and emotional intelligence and by increasing the capacity to harness collective intelligence. Haku Global develops science-based frameworks for applying and scaling future readiness and innovation across the organization. In this episode's dialogue, we discuss when to stay with the herd and when to trust your gut and leave the herd, and how leadership can develop their ability to trust their inner voice. If you're interested in how to think outside the herd mentality, how to develop your inner sense of knowing, how to make decisions that are free from external noise, how to limit the outside-in influence and enhance the inside-out experience to make better choices, why it is important to focus on the next steps, how to shift away from the threat-focused reaction and towards reward-focused behavior, and the importance of empathy and authenticity in leadership, then this episode is for you. Let's listen. Loretta and Bill, thank you both for joining me on this episode. And as always, I want to start with this key question of, you know, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures given uncertainty, complexity, and exponential change in the world? And love to hear your perspectives on this question. Start with Loretta.
Hi, aloha. So a short answer to an enormous question. my work always focuses on the animal brain and how that helps us understand ourselves. So one key thing about animals, about mammals that we are, is that they feel safe in groups. They look for groups for safety. But in times of change, well, the group doesn't always have the best impulses of where to go. And sometimes you have to rely on your own impulses. You have better access to information, or you trust your own analysis better. And the minute you act on it, then your mammal brain tells you that you're not safe because you're not with the group. So I think the more we understand that natural impulse, the better we can trust our own judgment, even when it requires us to deviate from the herd. Give you one other example of how the animal brain can help us. So everyone's probably heard of this chemical called cortisol, which is the animal brain's distress and alarm signal. And once your cortisol is released, it stays in your body for an hour. And its job is to tell you to look for threat. So once your cortisol is released, then everything looks bad. So sometimes we get into a spiral and we exaggerate threats. And a simple solution would be to do nothing for an hour once you're triggered and let the cortisol get metabolized so that you could have a fresher look at the information.
Very interesting. Thank you, Loretta. And Bill, on your side, you're coming from a different perspective on this and curious to hear what you think about this key question of how can leadership be more intelligent about the future?
Picking up on what Loretta said, I mean, that's very, very interesting, and I agree with that, definitely. But what perpetuates it further in 2020 and where we are as leaders, okay, whether you're a leader in a smaller organization, an independent, or in a large multinational, is the release of cortisol and the, you know, back to what Loretta said, the fight or flight response, and you know, using a euphemism that way. You know, do you stay and fight, or do you react and fly and leave? Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you react and leave with the herd or go into a certain direction due to panic, okay, are you following the herd erroneously? Okay, so leaders now and going into the future really need, in my perspective, and you know what I'm definitely experiencing in the last 3 to 4 years and even a bit longer in current events now that we were just talking about, is you need to have an outside in perspective, okay, and be more aware of signals, okay, to prevent, you know, a cortisol reaction and you making the wrong move, okay. In the past, okay, before social media, the explosion of, you know, let me check CNN 50 times a day. What's the latest on this situation, that situation? We weren't bombarded as leaders, okay, with the stimuli. So I think we were able to kind of control our reactions, okay, in terms of the mammal brain and cortisol, because we had more of an insight-only perspective, okay, in terms of the sphere that we were operating in. But now we're bombarded and I think influenced more by outside in impacts, okay, that we need to be adept to. And you know, it's almost like a higher level frequency or filtering that we need to become more adept at picking up the true signal as leaders.
So it's, I guess following up, it seems like it's this idea of there's so much more noise out there in the world. Is that kind of a way to say it?
Yeah, exactly.
So Loretta, from your perspective, how do we deal with the noise? How does the animal brain deal with this noise?
Well, to me, the only skill that ever means anything is it's trust in your own skills. So for example, if you're a gazelle, you're constantly bombarded with sounds and smells that could be a predator. And yet, if you just focused on potential threats, then you would never meet your survival needs and stay alive. So our brain has really evolved to screen and filter information, and we have to trust our own filter. And a lot of people are, you know, reaching that conclusion that they have to filter out a lot of information and then trust their own filter. So I personally don't listen to the news at all. And I try to avoid the kind of group threats that are so familiar. And that can have a downside, including some people will sneer at you and think you're uninformed. But I have to trust in my own skills and say, in the long run, I'm better off without that extra noise than pleasing the person who's already too sucked into that.
It's very interesting too, because as a leader, your employers, your followers, employees will all, if they're listening to the news or watching that, they're getting a lot of these threat signals potentially, or
right,
noise in the background. So even if you're, as a leader, even if you're not engaging that, it's still something that could be influencing your work, right?
Right, exactly. And the tradition is that knowing the latest is what is respected, mm-hmm, and that makes you a leader. But I don't think that's real leadership. I think that's just sort of the early immature training that we have of, like, knowing the latest gives you the superficial appearance of having better insight. But then as you mature, you understand that insight comes from distance rather than, quote unquote, the latest.
And Bill, from your perspective, how do we deal with the noise, or how can leadership deal with the noise, not only that they have to filter, but also their teams and organization?
Yeah, I agree with Loretta, and I think it's, mm-hmm, a balancing act. I mean, getting the latest and the most relevant and real information is important, but not necessarily reacting to that, okay, which may not be completely factual, or it may change again. Mm. So, it's a bit of letting the story unfold, okay, and watching it from a distance, mm, to get more dimensions of the input of what's really going on before, as a leader, you can kind of move forward, safely. Part of this, though, is a combination of a number of other things. In my experience, it's past experience. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, personally or collectively as a community or society or a region, we've been down this road before, maybe not exactly in the same situation, but there's some similarities to this situation. So what did we do in the past? How did we learn from it? How can we move forward? Mm-hmm. The other thing for me, and this is more of a personal response, is I listen to my inner voice, okay? And for me, it's almost uncanny, okay? Mm-hmm. So the decision, back to what I said earlier, fight or flight, okay? Somebody said this to me once in my career, and this always stuck with me. They said, Bill, you're going to go through issues in your career like we all do, but only you instinctually will know exactly when it's 100% the right time to leave a situation. Mm. And that is 100% true. I mean, that's played out so many times in my life where, should I stay? Should I go? Should I go in this direction? Should I go in that direction? But most of the time, at the right time, the instinct kicked in, and the timing was the right time. Hmm. So I don't know, in terms of the mammalian brain and our human thinking, how you harness more of your and bottle more of your instinct to apply, but that's what separates us apart, I think, from other animals, for better or for worse sometimes, I guess. And, not all animals, but it's the instinct, the instinctual side of things in terms of the timing that I picked up on.
Yeah, very interesting. It kind of goes back to your point, Loretta, about, trusting your skill, right?
Yes.
And I guess it's kind of an interesting point Bill brings up, is how do we harness more of that, personal skill, that in either, whether it be intuition or your inner voice or trust in yourself, how do we harness that better?
Well, as he said, past experience is significant, and mm-hmm, that is how our brain differs from animals, is that we have more storage capacity in our brain, so we could store more past experience. But the trust or distrust of your own experience, that's not in the past, that's in the present. It's a chemical thing where our brain is always releasing either positive feeling chemicals or negative feeling chemicals. Mm. So once the negative feeling is going on, then you don't trust your impulses, and then you go to some default response. So when you understand that that's happening, then you can realize that that's created internally rather than being an external fact. And then you can redirect yourself towards something positive. So what I use this very superficial example. If you're in a distressful meeting and you take 5 minutes away from the meeting and walk up and down stairs while listening to comedy, you give your brain and body like a full charge of wiping the slate clean and redirecting, and makes it easier to not flow into that automatic threat perception. And once you do it and it works, then you build confidence in your own skill of redirecting away from threat and toward reward. And from the animal perspective, I always say is an animal's survival depends on its next step. So our human brain wants to say, oh, that's the perfect solution, and I can prevent all problems forever because I have the perfect solution. That's not realistic, and we know that's not realistic. So we need to some extent to focus on our next step and get our confidence from that.
I really like that point of, you know, just taking something simple, you know, walking, listening to comedy to kind of change that internal state. Seems like changing the narrative around what's being experienced in the moment too.
Right.
And I think that goes back to like what Bill said, how do we let the story unfold before we give it like a beginning and an end, right? Before we complete the story. Bill, do you have any follow-up with that?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, some of the work and, you know, what I'm looking closely at, which fascinates me, is quantum computing. So, you know, with quantum, you know, it could be a classical computing, it's a zero or one output, okay, in terms of binary computing, either or, you know, but it, back to the context of this discussion, and with quantum, it's more of a quantum view in my view, in the sense that, well, there, you've got to look at, in terms of those next steps, multiple scenarios, okay, and the probability of those happening, okay, and then kind of listen to your inner voice that says, that guides you to the best outcome, okay, and it's almost like a quantum perspective along those lines, okay, so you have multiple inputs, multiple states, but the probability, okay, it could be either or it could be one, but, you know, listen to your inner voice and your instincts and what is going to probably be the next best step. Okay. You know, but the other side of that though, too, to what Loretta said, you know, if you're an individual, you know, that's had, I guess, listening to your inner voice and you've had a rough life, okay, you know, and had experiences, does that influence your next steps? Because you can get dragged into negative thinking in the sense that, well, I've had a bumpy life. It's always going to be this way. How do you switch over to, you know, turning your thinking to say, well, yeah, 9 out of 10 times in the past, it resulted in a negative outcome. But this next time, it's not going to be that way, you know? So, you know, training the brain to kind of think in a different direction too, I guess, is part of the challenge.
Yeah, it's like choosing which wave do we collapse, right, in the to create that next step. And there's a lot of, you know, possibilities out there. I think one of the ideas I'm thinking a lot about, I think it goes back to Loretta and this animal brain, and we have these sensations or feelings in our body or an experience, and then we immediately, at least the way I've been taught is that I've been taught to immediately start to create a story around it, and that makes sense or meaning around it, but it doesn't mean that story is right or correct. And delaying it, taking the time to delay that story and gather more information, explore alternatives, I think is really important, especially for leadership. And I'm kind of curious, you know, as we're talking about this, we've been talking a lot from our personal, like, own perspective, but I'm curious, how can leaders use this information to help their teams, the people that follow them? What are your thoughts on that, Loretta?
So something fascinating is called mirror neurons that mirror the responses of others. So when a leader has a sense of panic or overreaction, then it will be easily mirrored by others. And when a leader has a sense of confidence, then that is more easily mirrored by others. So it's good to know about that. And sometimes in the modern world, the advice that's given for leadership, I don't always agree with, because it's so much focused on empathy that you can end up like reinforcing more negative team members when that's not what you should be doing. So I think it's important to sustain your confidence and direction, even as you try to be empathetic.
Bill, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, in echoing along those lines is the you know, the aspect of you know, I would say authenticity, but balanced authenticity. Okay. And there's a lot of feigning of vulnerability. Okay, or feigning of failure. I don't want, you know, I don't want to make it sound like you know, there's a lot of schools of thought. And I'm picking up on what Loretta said that I don't agree with either, in the sense that, well, to really be a leader, you have needed to fail 100 times and you need to be comfortable with it. That's the only way that you're going to learn how to be a leader. Okay. But then a lot of people pick up on that, and I'm not entirely sure that they've all failed those 100 times and they've learned from it. You know, so there's an emphasis on showing vulnerability and failing more from an emphasis on showing vulnerability from a negative aspect, you know, that says, look, you know, I failed. Okay. I've learned. That makes me a leader. Well, not necessarily. I mean, that's an ingredient. Okay. To learn, obviously, but there just seems to be a movement in leadership in this day and age that says, you know, the only way that you can become a true leader is you need to show that you're vulnerable and that you failed. And you know, I'm more of the opinion and perspective of, well, sometimes yes, but sometimes no. Okay. I mean, I think it's more important to be authentic and real, you know, along those ways. And, you know, sometimes the leader has to say, well, you know, we need to be careful because we've made this mistake before. And other times they need to say, well, we've made this mistake, but we learned from it, and this is what we've learned. Now we can take on that risk and move forward.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's interesting, this idea of empathy, authenticity. We definitely hear a lot about those, and then it's sometimes confusing what those mean or when they should be used, when they can be abused as well. But I think authenticity, that seems like a nice word to use, because it does mean that you're trying to be yourself in the moment, whether that is being empathic or not empathic, right? And there's something potentially valuable about that, because then you know where that person stands, who they are. But if they try to fake it, then it can create confusion. And I'm curious too about going back to Loretta's point about empathy. And this is for Bill. What's the importance of empathy as a leader? Is it focused on too much?
No, I think it's very important, but I think once again, it needs to be balanced in the context of authenticity as well. Okay. You know, the same person that told me, you know, what I said earlier, the quote that I remembered from, you know, one of the early leaders in my career that influenced me, he also said that, you know, if a person is reacting a certain way, try to understand why they are, where they're coming from. Okay, because if a person is acting, or a leader's acting in a certain way, okay, there's something influencing that behavior for the most part. Okay, and once you kind of wrap your head around that and get a clearer understanding, then you know that allows you to kind of process the information and not react either. Right? And it gives, you know, your feedback back to the leader in terms of how you process what they're doing. Well, I understand where they're coming from, or potentially they're overreacting or even underreacting. So that's all part of empathy and authenticity. So,
So authenticity, supposedly the idea that this is my true self, but my true self is really just the random collection of my past experience, and past experience can never be a perfect predictor of the future. So we all need flexibility, but we all default so easily to the neural pathways built from our past experience. So for every one of us, it's a challenge to say, well, this is not necessarily true. It just seems true because old neural pathways conduct electricity so easily. So we have to keep reminding ourselves. What I always say is, okay, I have billions of extra neurons that I could use to see this in other ways, but the other ways don't feel true because it's so hard to activate new neurons as opposed to old neurons. So that's, again, what I call maturity, is that I equate it to driving a highway, a paved large highway through the Amazon versus slashing a trail through the Amazon with a machete. So it's very stressful and burdensome to hack a new trail, but that's what we need to do in our neurons. And as adults, we can do that. Whereas, you know, when we're young, we tend to just coast on the freeway.
Yeah, it's interesting when you bring up this point about, you know, we have these past neural pathways that are very fast. They've been maybe myelinated, so they work really efficiently. And then we're faced with uncertain futures, and we have to make new decisions and choices that the past neural pathways really aren't helping us as much on. And then in that moment of making this new kind of leap, new decisions, we might feel we feel inauthentic, right? Is that and it doesn't feel like us anymore.
is the
problem,
exactly.
Right? How do leaders deal with that? Because I think it seems like that's going to be an increasing challenge, maybe not, but it seems like as the future becomes faster, more uncertain, there's more unknowns, but also more opportunities, we also might run into this challenge of feeling inauthentic as a leader.
So I think being aware of your own, being aware of your own internal bias, that the old feels true simply because the effortless flow of electricity in your brain is how you define truth. And so when you have a new view, it's so hard to get energy to flow along new neural pathways that it takes your 100% focus. And that's what so many people are talking about today, is this idea of putting away distractions and focusing. And that to know that once you but travel a new path a few times, the neurons will start to connect, electricity will flow, and it will start to feel normal. So we all have the power to create a new normal, but we have to consciously choose it and effortfully create it.
And Bill, do you have any follow-up on that? This idea of, you know, when you start to choose something new as a leader, you start to feel inauthentic, potentially.
Yeah, well, you know, that gets back to, you know, the only growth that comes is from being pressured or discomfort, you know, leaving your comfort zone. Okay. Results in discomfort, but that's usually where the greatest growth is. Or, you know, diamonds don't become diamonds without pressure, as another example. But also the other side of that, though, too, is your past experience. Okay, can work in that way too. So if you've put yourself in precarious situations and you've taken risks in your life and your career, okay, and you know they've come out okay and they've come out beneficial for you, then you'll continue, I think, based on that neural path, to kind of look for those situations where, okay, well, this may not be program based on my last experience exactly like that, but it's different and I want to try it. So that's another dynamic too. And that's what I'm kind of going through in my own personal life right now, where I've been outside the US 45-50% of my career. And the outcomes for me have been more positive it's hard to characterize, but in terms of personal growth and professional growth, okay, my mind opening up to different possibilities, you know, looking at different cultures, seeing how things unfold, okay. But, you know, then the question is, am I being predisposed to keep doing that? Is that the right thing to keep doing, okay, as a leader? Or you know, do I go back to my roots and come back into the U.S. and settle back in the U.S.? And I don't have an answer for that yet. I mean, you know, and you know, so I just think, you know, my result, my outcome has been most of my growth personally and professionally has been through looking for areas that I don't know and I haven't been exposed to as a challenge, okay, and then kind of being a chameleon and moving into those situations and then and following my instincts. And it's not always perfect. It never is. But, you know, you're adding more to the universe of your experience that way too. You know, so whatever comes up next, you learn from the latest challenge that you're going through.
No, interesting perspective on how this idea of your past neural pathways could be helping you identify opportunities that are outside of the norm, and taking those risks, versus the idea where it's kind of putting you into a box, right? So really, yeah, really interesting how you can look at it a little bit both ways. Loretta, what I'd like to do is any kind of last thoughts on this conversation and we'll wrap up.
Bill mentioned about I made these choices and I don't know what's the ideal path. So it's really good for us to give ourselves the flexibility to know that there is no ideal path and we can make something of whatever path we end up on. It really reduces our stress a lot when we know that. And so many people are out there giving advice about this ideal and that ideal that many people come to the conclusion, oh, that other people are somehow having this ideal path and you're missing out on. So what was so fascinating to me is that when our happy chemicals are released, that it's always a short spurt and then they're soon metabolized and they're gone. So nobody else is on this high all the time, as much as it may seem that way, that everybody has ups and downs because our happy chemicals are not meant to flow for no reason. They're meant to reward specific moments. And we cannot like put that pressure on ourselves to expect to be on this high all the time.
And Bill, any final thoughts on the conversation overall?
Yeah, one other thing I'd like to share, you mentioned it, you hit the nail on the head, Loretta, there. And one point in my career, I lived in California. I had always wanted to live in California, okay? And something happened. I got a promotion early in my career, and I moved to Orange County. Very good job. Then within 3 or 4 months, or maybe 5 months after that, I got involved in a relationship with a native California girl. And the word that kind of, it was like everything was falling directly into place in terms of unhappy chemicals. Okay. And if Freud uses your id, right? Where everything kind of comes together, you know, you're in that, all the dimensions come together and you're in that id, the pie chart's being filled and you're in that happy place. But to your point, it was temporary and fleeting. Okay. And when some of that starts to crumble down, okay, so the relationship didn't work out, okay? And at that time in my career, California was going through the real estate crisis in mid-90s or late 90s, okay? And then the job situation got kind of shaky. And it was like, you know, it was crushing because, you know, you have for the first time in your life, everything's falling into place and you're programmed to say, this was a right choice. This is fantastic. My happy chemicals are working, but then, you know, it's like the, you know, kerplunk, the piece comes out of the puzzle, and then your problem is, well, is it's going to continue, and it's a fluid moment. So I just wanted to share that.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people feel like that's kind of happening now in a lot of the business space, and a lot, other people are seeing a lot of opportunity. Other people are seeing their world kind of falling apart, where everything was running smooth and perfect. So I think it's kind of a very relevant space. How did you deal with that, Bill? What was your...
Well, I took a step back, okay, yeah. and then there was an opportunity to move, okay. Didn't want to leave California. I mean, I was hell-bent on staying there, and you know, that was my dream come true. But then there was an opportunity to move to North Carolina, back to the East Coast, an area that I didn't know much about other than what I read. And I was only there once before, and I thought it was, you know, compared to California culture, a bit, you know, different. Okay, and I pulled into town in North Carolina with a Volkswagen Rabbit convertible and a surfboard in my car. So I kind of went through a little bit of culture shock, but I did it because it was the right career move in terms of the next step. Okay, it was with a big bank in North Carolina, which is, well, I mean, now you may debate next step. It's now Wells Fargo, but at that time it was Wachovia Bank. And it was a very solid bank, traditional Southern bank, risk averse. And it was, from a career perspective, it was a good move. Okay. And no, I was pushing back internally on, I don't want to live in North Carolina. I want to stay in Southern California, you know, mm-hmm. But I kind of sacrificed, and looking back in retrospect, that was a critical moment in my career path. Okay. I mean, I had to give up some of the other pie chart for that sacrifice, but it was the right step to do. So, you know, just interesting how that kind of played out that way. And, you know, looking back now, I don't regret it. You know, it had to happen for that reason for me. So, and it did. So,
yeah, it just kind of goes back to that Loretta's point of the next step, right? Mm-hmm. And really trusting that next step and making sure that it's not, you know, just based in survival mode, but maybe has something, you know, has a positivity behind it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on those points, just to cap that up, I could have stayed in California. So I could have done whatever. I could have held multiple jobs. You know, that would have been another potential outcome or next step, but you know, I kind of followed my instincts that said, well, you know, you're 31 years old, 30 years old at this point, get your career on track. And this is a good opportunity to do that. So, and then look to revisit coming back to California at a later point. That's what. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you both for your time. What I like to do at the very end here is just end with a one word that you would like to leave future leaders. So this might be kind of difficult sometimes for people, but Loretta, if you could leave a leader with one word, what would that word be?
I always like to focus on self-acceptance.
Oh, nice. And Bill?
Can I have two words?
Okay.
Outside in.
Outside in. Great. Thank you both for your time. Really appreciate it, your insights and wisdom.
Thank you for organizing this.
Yeah, no, fantastic discussion. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more Futures Intelligent Leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale Futures Intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.